Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Bowen, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Net Live, this special pre-recorded edition, the spring break edition of the show. Many of our crew have other obligations this week. I myself am out in the desert with family enjoying spring break with the kids. Chris McGee and his family have welcomed a new addition just last week, a brand new baby girl. Welcome to the family. Everything went fine. So congratulations to the McGee family. They are at home with the new baby, having a great time. So Geeter has the week off. DJ Roche is doing his DJ thing somewhere in the United States. And Reed Pretty is in Russia trying to win some playoff games. So we thought this would be a great opportunity for us to take a look back at some of the great interviews that we've had, some of the great rants that we've had on this show. Some of it older, some of it more recent. We're going to give you three interviews. We have Russ Rose from back in 2009, right on the eve of the Final Four that year, where his team would go on to defeat Texas in what went down as possibly the greatest NCAA women's match of all time, certainly the greatest final of all time. Really a fantastic match. But we talked to Russ about what was upcoming, not only in that match, but also about his program and the success. We've had him on subsequently, but I think it's always good to go back and revisit some of these moments, especially when you have access to great people getting it done in the world of volleyball like Russ Rose. We also have a player, Heather Bowen, silver medalist in 2008 and longtime member of the U.S. Women's National Team. We talked to her from Italy last season about playing in Italy, about playing with younger players, about being back in the gym with Coach McCutcheon. Just a great all-around person, kind of a neat person to talk to about the junior scene and other things and things she's experienced inside the sport. She's been around for a very long time at that level, playing and getting it done at a national and international caliber. Finally, we have for you James Leitz of IMG. IMG, of course, is one of the premier sports marketing firms in the world, if not the premier entity in the world. They're partnering with USA Volleyball on the upcoming Beach Trials Series, which will qualify athletes for the Olympics, in addition to a USAV IMG, what they hope will be a tour and a regular set of dates, I think, beyond just qualification. So we had a chance to visit with James back in November of last year, and I thought this was worth a re-listen, an opportunity to get a little bit more out of what he's really saying about the sport, about the business of the sport, and how an entity as connected and as successful as IMG views the sport of beach volleyball. Also touch on indoor volleyball just a little bit, but I think this is a great opportunity for a global marketing company to get a view of what volleyball can really do and could mean big things in the future. So give that a listen. I think it's important stuff for the sport. Finally, we'll end with a couple of rants. They were rants at the end of last year from myself and from Chris, and I think they're just fun. So give them a re-listen, something on the NCAA, something about clean living coming from Geeter. So I hope you enjoy these interviews. We put them together for you. We'll look forward to being back live next week, and we have a big announcement coming about a partnership that the Net Live has signed. Good news for the sport. Good news for our podcast. Thanks so much for being fans. Also, check out on our Facebook, there's a new Matt Garthoff video out, Wheel of Scott Fortune. More terrific work from Matt Garthoff, so check it out there. Email us, comments you have, thenetlive@gmail.com. We'll see you back here live next week. We'll start you out with Russ Rose. This was back on the 14th of December, 2009, just before he and his team would embark on another Final Four appearance. Russ Rose. Hey, thank you very much for joining us here on the Net Live. We appreciate you coming on into the home court.
Man, I was listening to you guys talk, and boy, it's, you guys know everybody. I like hearing you talk about the beach and the international guys, and I'm just a lurker out there.
So are you a fan of the game then, outside of just your own efforts in the NCAA?
Oh, no question about it.
Very good. Well, you know, we heard that you were disappointed a little bit with your team's performance, in particular in round two. Assess your team's progress so far through the tournament.
Well, I mean, our first match, I thought we played pretty well. The second match against Penn was a match that I just thought we were flat emotionally, and they were, you know, and it was the perfect example of the smart versus the overconfident, because, you know, they were serving sky balls to us and tipping the ball and having a great time every time we misplayed things. And we had a very tough practice on Monday. And then we played a lot better this past weekend in the situation where we needed to. You know, Florida's a very strong team. Always tough to play a team on the road. And Cal's an exceptional team who, unfortunately, the last 3 years we've played, and you know, at least unfortunate for them, because they're a great team, and they've got certainly one of the top players in college volleyball, and Hanna Katera, who you know, hits the ball like a guy. I mean, hits the ball as hard as most of the guys on our men's team here. So it was, you know, we felt very fortunate to be able to play as well as we did. And you know, it's always a tough match. You know, a one and done tournament. You need to be ready to play. And you know, we're pleased and excited about the chance to go to another Final Four.
You mentioned the overconfidence of your team during that match. How have you combated that through this entire run?
Well, I mean, you know, it's in most of the cases we play pretty hard. So this was really more just one of the rare times where, you know, we weren't focused. We, you know, I mean, the streak that we have is just kind of, it's like three streaks. You know, we lost a match in 2007 to Stanford in a match that I thought we should have won, and probably spent about 45 minutes afterwards before we left the locker room for a five-hour bus ride back, kind of going through what I thought the players' needs were.
Yeah.
Certainly what I believe my needs for them were. And then we didn't lose any more matches the rest of that season, and beat Stanford in the finals. And then last year we had a team that was as close to being an all-star team as I've seen in college volleyball, where we only lost two games the entire season.
Yeah.
And then this team is a new team that's played well and has found ways to win, and part of it is based on the fact that we have some veteran players from those last 2 years' teams, and we've been relatively healthy to date, which in the end ends up being one of the most important components.
What are the things you and the coaches are talking about, that when you talk about the team and you're talking about practice and upcoming and focus, what are you doing to maintain that focus with the players every single day in the gym?
Well, I mean, you guys all know you didn't get to the level you were at by being up and down emotionally or not taking your responsibilities seriously. So it's maybe part of the recruiting process where you tell kids up front, this is what it's going to be about. This is the expectations, how things should be approached on a day-to-day basis. And if they sign on, then your assumption is that they heard you in the first case. So I don't ever feel bad when I pull someone aside and ask them to go a little bit harder and focus a little bit more or to take the day off.
Well, tell us about the upcoming match against Hawaii. What do you see as their strengths that you'll have to deal with?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, when I say I don't know much about Hawaii, it's because they're not on TV enough for us to see them. I saw their match against Michigan, and I know a couple of things. Number one, I know Dave Shoji's a terrific coach, a good friend, and I know you don't win 1,000 matches and 4 national championships, you know, randomly. So I know he knows what's going on. His assistant Sealy's certainly a guy who's got a great feel for the game. And, you know, the personnel, we played them last year in our first match of the year at Hawaii, and it was Keani's first match. And
yeah.
She was impressive then, and she's even more impressive now. You know, she's, you know, for the international players, you know, she's like a Maria Luis. She's, when you see her standing next to Shoji, you say she's 5'9". And then when she's hitting the ball, you're like, she plays like she's 6'3 or 6'4". So she's a big kid. And, you know, all of our experiences when we played Hawaii in the past have been their volleyball IQ is usually much higher than players who you're trying to train to be good volleyball players. They're smaller in stature, but their game is a much more cerebral game. They know how to play. They're, you know, it's a pretty emotional environment everywhere they go because of the Hawaiian, you know, the mystique, the population always seems to follow them wherever they go. They're like the home team. So it's, you know, it'll be a challenge for us. They're, you know, they beat Illinois and Michigan back-to-back nights, and, you know, we had tough matches with both of those teams over the last couple of years. So I know for Hawaii to beat them and to beat them as soundly as they did, they're very good.
Talking about smaller players who impact the game, a 6-0 run keyed by Alyssa Derrico's powerful jump serving during your last match was critical. On this show, I've lamented the lack of big-time jump servers in the women's game. Why don't more women develop powerful jump serves in today's game?
Well, I mean, what's interesting about that, Kevin, is, you know, I'm always trying to get information. So, you know, I talk with the national team staff all the time, and they're telling me that most of the top teams are going, even the men, are going more to a jump floater than just a spin serve. So maybe that's not going to happen with Clay and the guys that are really jacking it up. But right. Certainly, you know, DeRico had a great club coach who really impacted that. And it seems to me that the best jump servers are the ones that were kind of all-around players. And maybe they changed roles in college. So now at least her, you know, she was a 5'8 all-around player on a state champion team. And she ends up being a back row player at Penn State. You know, Megan Hodge has a jump serve. Destiny Hooker has a really good jump serve.
Right.
And, you know, we played a couple. Hannah Katera has a very good jump serve. So there's a number of kids out there that bring it pretty good. And, you know, but, you know, I think the ability to read the trajectory of the ball early doesn't make it that hard to pass unless it's somebody that's, you know, putting it at 50 or 60 miles per hour. And then it's really control versus you getting yourself in the right spot.
Now, Derrico is a libero playing on your team, but she is serving. And I wonder why, this is kind of an external question to the NCAA, but why the NCAA continues to employ rules that are not common in international volleyball or some other areas of youth volleyball. Why do they continue to have different rules, not only with that, but now they just changed the score to 25? Can that influence be changed? Can that be changed around? Does it need to be changed around, or are there good reasons for some of those differences?
You know, I don't really know. I'm just, you know, I'm just somebody who, when they change the rule, I try to adapt when it happens. We had a couple of years ago when we were not at the top of the college game, and I think a great deal of it was because I didn't see rally score coming down the road. And I had a team made up of really good ball handlers that could play the game, but they really weren't point scorers that seemed to be more prevalent, especially in the college women's game where you have 12 subs.
Right.
So, you know, when we started recruiting specifically to this brand of volleyball, you know, we were able to elevate at least our gameplay, but many other teams have done the same thing. But I don't know why they changed some of the rules. You know, two of those aces by Derrico hit the top of the net and fell over, and, you know, that was a rule that I never liked in the first place and still don't really care for.
So you're just the guy working here. You don't make the rules. You just work within them.
I used to be on the rules committee many years ago when I was on the NCAA volleyball committee, and Jim Coleman was my guy, and he was the liaison with the FIVB, and it was so bizarre when they were changing the rules, and Jim would always say that the FIVB was asking us to change rules so they could get the data, so they could experiment, because we had the largest league in the world because of college volleyball.
Right.
And yet college volleyball, when the rules committee changed the rules, they were saying, well, we're changing because we want to get more volleyball on TV and we want to follow the FIVB. And I was like, the FIVB is asking us to do their legwork. And in that span of time, I have not seen a lot more volleyball on TV, but I've seen an incredible amount of Texas Hold'em poker.
Yeah, we complain about that one all the time. You touched on recruiting. What is it that you look for in a kid? You're building a huge successful program. When you're going to a home, what is it you're looking at besides just the height, the weight, the vertical jump?
Well, I mean, in my case, I'm more of an attitude coach, so I want kids that are going to play hard and they can take somebody asking them to be accountable. And you know, there's a lot of other coaches that are going to spend a lot of time doing technical things, and they want to make sure everything's done perfectly. And you know, I'm not into that. I'm into saying, okay, here's a level of play that we're playing at. And to be successful at this level of play, these are the things that I've identified as important. And I'm a stubborn guy, and I keep to those things. So I'm not critical of the others who are 100% sure they have the method to get it done correctly. But I'm sure there's a lot of ways to win and be successful. And I'm sure that all of you guys that have played at the various levels that you've played at, and especially the people that are still playing professionally, they see, hey, there's a lot of ways to get the job done, and it's still about scoring points. So you're either scoring them because you're earning them, or you're scoring them for the other team because you're not very good at it. And, you know, I try to get our kids to understand that it's as important to be able to score as it is to not make errors.
Very good. Well, getting people to buy into your system is an important part, and getting them to respond mentally. And we have an individual here on the show who thinks that he may have played a large part in your success.
Yeah. Remember 2 years ago when I came into your locker room and gave a big pep talk to your team before you won the first national championship? How much?
No, that was my second championship, but that was your first championship.
Oh,
with
in a row.
Volleyball.
In a row. That's what I'm talking about.
And we had to hoist you up on the table, and you know the first take was fabulous. The second one, you know, my administrator's still mad at me for doing that. But
I'm still mad.
We'll be doing
AJ.
It again. You know, if you want to join us, are you going to be in Tampa?
I won't be. I wish though.
Oh, there's the invitation. Danny kind of can go right back in the locker room.
There you go, back where he belongs, man. You're due for a new video.
Well, hey Russ, thanks very much for joining us. We'll get you out of here on this. Give us your expectation for the upcoming Final Four and what you're telling your team going into your first match.
Well, we haven't met yet, so you know we played on Saturday. We flew back. The girls have finals, so I'll see them tonight for about an hour, and then we'll fly down to Tampa tomorrow. So we don't have any specific game plan or practice things set up, but you know I'll just identify to them that we played for those of the girls that were on the team last year. How good Hawaii was, how hard they play, the style of play that they have. And if we're fortunate enough to beat Hawaii, then we're going to play the winner of a match where we're very familiar with Minnesota because we play them in conference. And a Texas team, which is, you know, identified as the best, you know, probably the most athletic team in college volleyball. So if the seeds hold up, then it'll be us playing Texas. But, you know, those of us that are, you know, students of sport realize that the seeds don't always win. So, you know, it's going to be a great Final Four, and we're excited to be a part of it.
Russ, thank you so much for joining us here on the Net Live. We wish you the best of luck in the upcoming tournament.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Head coach, bye-bye. Penn State Women, Russ Rose, joining us here on the Net Live. Good stuff from Russ Rose back in 2009. Of course, his team would go on to that Final Four, winning their championship in five over Texas, and then repeated again this season with another national championship taken home in Kansas City, December of 2010. Russ Rose, one of the great coaches this game has. Next, we're going to take a short break. Right on the other side, we will have Heather Bowne, USA National Team Athlete, silver medalist in 2008, an all-around great person. You hear her in the open every week. This was a fun chance for us to catch up with her back in March of last year as she was playing in Italy. Heather Bowne, other side of the break.
Parents, do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Back into the special spring break edition of the Net Live. As promised, we do have Heather Bowne up next. She's a 2008 silver medalist and longtime member of the national team, and talked to us last year in the middle of her season in Italy. Give it a listen.
All right, our first guest of today is Olympic silver medalist, longtime national team member, and a pivotal part of the success that the women had in 2008.
I love her.
Oh, she's a terrific player, great person. Heather Bowne. Welcome.
Wow.
Live in the net.
Hi, guys.
I just love listening to your intro every Monday.
Heather, question number one is, why do you keep messing up our podcast name every single time we start the show?
You know what about that, though? Reed, when he first asked me, and he's like, can you do this call in and whatever, I did like five different takes, and then my dad heard that and calls me in Italy and is laughing at me because he's like, can't you do anything right? You go and you screw it up. And I'm like, out of all the ones I did, Reed has to pick that one. Yeah.
Well, it's the funniest one. Actually, my wife who listens to the show, she made the comment, I really like Heather's introduction because
people
her
like
laugh
it.
Is
people
so
like
genuine
it.
Afterwards that it's just a really fun
I'm an idiot.
Fun thing.
I can't even do it right. Like, it was, yeah, it's the easiest thing to say, and I was like, okay, I can do it. I can do it, like practicing, take the like do the take, screw it up.
Well,
like,
we,
that's pretty par for life on me.
Well, we love it. Par for life. Well, you seem to have had quite a bit of success in the world of volleyball. You've been on the national team for how many years now is it going on?
I think my first thing with them was when I was still at Hawaii was in 99. I did World University Games when they went to Spain.
Very
that was
nice.
my first trot with them. So about 10 years, 11 years now.
Will you be heading back this year to join the team?
You're not old.
Just old in volleyball, not old in life. You get outside of volleyball, you find out, hey, I'm not that old.
Well, I think it's just the bubble of volleyball keeps you young.
Definitely, definitely. Heather, are you going back this year with head coach Hugh McCutchen? Will you be returning to the national team?
Yeah, he was actually just out here in Italy. He saw myself play Lindsay Berg, who's the setter for our team. I played against her in an Italian league match, and he was out here, and we kind of went over the scheduling for the summer and trying to figure out what tournaments are good for us to kind of work with. And, you know, it's just I'm out here till the end of May, so as soon as I get back, just kind of get thrown into the mix. The girls are already out there training in Anaheim, so... but, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I knew last summer was the time that I could take off and have some free time, and from here on out I'm in the gym, so looking forward to it.
Hey, Heather, it's Geeter. I was in Beijing, and I went to one of your matches. I think you guys played Italy, and you guys were down big and ended up coming back.
Oh, you got a good one.
Yeah, you guys ended up coming back. Actually, Lindsay came in that game
match.
And sparked you guys. But at what point, because I followed you guys the rest of the time but didn't get to go to the matches, at what point did you think that might be a special run with that squad?
You know, I was roommates with Logan, and we would talk, like, after every match and just be like, okay, you know, got one down, next one to go. And I don't really think we ever thought about the outcome of it, like, the result. We just, one of our key things with the whole team, like, even when we had meetings before the games and stuff, and it was always really just focusing on the process of it,
yeah.
Not so much on the result of it. And I think that really helped us just to go game to game to game. And whoever was on the court and with us, you know, as you said, Birdie came in and did her job, you know, against Italy and really got us on that run. I think it was like 7-0 or something ridiculous. But I don't think there was ever a moment where we were like, oh, my God, we're going to win. Until we were in, you know, in the finals where you're guaranteed a medal and we were just like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh, this is like the best time ever. But going through it and each game to game, I don't think there was anybody that really ever said, you know, oh, we're guaranteed, because you're never guaranteed anything when you're there. You know, you have to work every game for it. And, you know, we just, I think as a team and as individual players, we're just really focused on the process of the whole thing.
You hit on the key word for me, Heather, and that's process. I coach girls club volleyball, and I'm always trying to hammer that home to parents and kids, because I think these days everyone just wants to, it has to be a win and it has to be all about them in this moment, but people don't let the process go. How key is that for a team to be able to let a process happen?
Well, I think it's huge, because I think a lot of the times if you continue to win, you don't really see the character of your team and you don't see the character of your players. You don't see what they're going to learn from a loss, because losing isn't always bad. And I think that's one thing in our society and in sports in general is, you know, kids are taught, you know, if you don't win, you're not good. Well, that's not true, because you're going to get better as you go on. You know, it's the hard losses, and whether it's in sports or in life or whatever it's in, that's when you're really going to learn about yourself and about the people that are there with you. And, you know, and that's all in the process, because you can't focus on, I'm going to win, I'm always going to win, because that's, it just ruins it. And I think you really grow as a person, as an athlete, as a group. You know, you're not, especially with volleyball, you can't, it's not an individual sport. You have to be a team. And you're not going to learn that trust that you need to have in that person next to you to know, you know, are they going to go for that ball? Or no, I can get that ball. Or, you know, and how to just build up as a team. And I think that's where I mean, I'm not a coach. I don't know. And I have my players that I play with, my teammates and stuff, but then maybe they think, you know, I've been around long enough that I know what I'm talking about, and so they can listen to me, and it's kind of like a coach-player type thing. But for me, I don't know that there's enough coaches out there that really emphasize the fact that it's about learning. It's not always about winning. And if you can, you know, you can have a losing season, but you can still win out of it. And I think that's one thing that they really need to focus on, especially with kids these days. Like, it's not always about, you know, taking home the gold, but it's about striving for that and working hard and working together. And whether it's in sports or whether it's after you're done playing sports and you go into the real world and you're working in a job, you're always going to have to work with the team. And if you can get that basis down, I think you'll be set for life.
Heather, when you're working and learning and going through that process of team building on the national team, obviously it's easier. You're all like-minded. You have similar experiences. But what changes when you bring that process to your Italian team where you are now, where you have a group of players, superstars from different countries brought together along with young Italians? What's been your experience there, and what special things need to be done to make that successful and build that same type of camaraderie on a team of not a homogenous group of players?
Yeah, it's a lot different when you're out here. I mean, you have, let alone, you know, when you're on the national team and you have girls coming from different philosophies from their college teams or whatever and coming in and trying to get together on the national team. But, like, over here, you don't only have different philosophies. You have completely different cultures. And, you know, getting girls to really understand, because just your way of saying things and doing things is so much different. Like, myself as an American, I know that we're very independent people, and, you know, they're not so much as Italians. Or, you know, I play with another Russian girl, and the rest are all Italians. For me this year, it's a little bit easier, and they know me. I've been around for a while, but, you know, it's hard to kind of get your points across and really understand and just how they've been raised. And, you know, they don't do, and it's not a knock on them, but they don't really do the university college thing, whereas we have that. So we get a little bit of time to grow and mature and really figure out who we are, whereas they're here and they're doing, you know, volleyball from like 15 years old. They're living on their own. They're not doing school. They're just playing sports. And, yeah, I don't know. It's good, because I think there's a little bit more trust, because, you know, you're thrown into, you know, at least here in Italy with the level, and every week you have to play tough games. And so you really have to learn to trust the people next to you on the court, and you have to learn to trust your staff and everything. You just have to, it's more of a blind trust thing. You know, but the process is never easy, and it'll go up and down. You'll see a lot of teams that struggle at the beginning of the year, and they'll grow as a team and they'll get better. And then by the end, which is when you want to peak, like, a lot of teams will be good, and you'll have some that'll go up and down during the season. And, you know, my team here, we still make a lot of errors, and, you know, you're not always going to play good every week. And that's one thing that I've seen a lot of girls that come from other countries and come into Italy is they can't handle, you know, not only physically but mentally, they can't handle playing hard every week. And I think that's one thing with a lot of the girls here that they've really become adjusted to, is being able to force themselves mentally and physically every week. And I think that helps us as far as growing as a team.
Well, you're listening to the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to Heather Bowne from Italy, U.S. national team silver medalist. Heather, I wanted to ask you about the system. You mentioned it there in Europe where the kids don't go to school. They don't have school teams. They're just playing professional. Given your experience through the college ranks and then playing with a lot of these players in Europe, what do you think is the better system, the professional European system or the college model, the American side?
You know, I think for as far as, you know, having the pipeline, so to speak, of playing, it's hard because I'm based on, you know, the educational system, and I think that's great, and I think it helps you in the long run. I think as athletes, we make better decisions because we have the basis of education. You know, not to say that these people here are ignorant or anything, but I think that as far as volleyball-wise, it's better that they, you know, play professionally because they're playing at high levels at young ages. Whereas us, I mean, you really don't get to international play until you're, you know, early 20s, you know, 23, 24, whenever you graduate college.
Yeah.
Because before that, you're in the NC2A or whatever. I think it benefits them in a volleyball standpoint, but I think that the mental side of the game, I think, is a little less strategic with them here.
Yeah.
Because they don't think, because for me, like, the volleyball match is sort of like a chess match. Like, you always have to know or expect or anticipate what the other person's going to do. If you have this shot, what are they going to come back at you at? And I see that in our practices and in our games. Like, they don't read that. And for me, and I don't know if that's just, you know, experience of being here or just mentally, like, cognitively, I can see that. And I just feel like they miss out on that a little bit because they don't have to think about that side of the game. They just play because they've always played.
We have an interesting question from Dan. He has a problem, Heather, that you need to help him.
Dan, I don't know if I can help. I'll try.
Okay, Dan.
Go ahead, Dan.
That last sounds exactly like the opening last. I enjoyed reading your blog during the 2008 Olympics. It was awesome. And I liked it so much that I friended you on Facebook and you never responded to my Facebook request.
Oh, you've been left in purgatory.
Wow.
Well, I was ignored, but you know, I still remember this. And
Dan would like to know why.
What's up?
Why?
Probably.
What is the question why you were not befriended?
Yeah.
Yeah, he requested it.
Except ignore.
Except ignore, act like you've never seen the request.
Was it on the volleyball, like the Heather Bowne volleyball page? Because that's automatic.
Nah, I don't know. It was like 2 years ago.
Heather, he
remember.
Tried to be your friend,
yeah,
and you said no.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Dan's never fully
know.
Recovered. He's grown a beard
just
to hide his shame.
He has a beard?
Oh, God, you should see the guy.
I'm a weep.
Yeah, he's tough.
Do you remember Rocky in Rocky IV when he was training?
Or the brawny man.
Drago? Yeah, or the brawny man.
Or anyone with a beard.
It's just weird. It happened overnight.
Maybe I was scared of the beard. Maybe that was it.
It's just weird because I saw him yesterday, like 3 days ago, and he didn't have a beard. And now it's like a full-grown man's beard.
Yeah, you need to have a less creepy-looking Facebook picture, and then maybe you'll get more friends, Dan.
Kenya grabbed it one time, and it was...
Heather, do you think the club girls volleyball season is too long like I do?
When did it go till? Because
it starts in December
now.
Oh, yeah.
December
same
to July.
Thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. And then you go right to high school.
Is it the same?
Yes.
I don't know, because they don't play every weekend, do they?
Oh, now they do. Now there's qualifiers
to
get into JOs, and then there's your mandatories. It's not every weekend, but it sure is a lot.
Have like 18 million young people that play the game. I guess to accommodate all the people, they have to have the tournaments or something.
Well, but we were talking about...
Young, especially when you're, you know, in school and doing that kind of stuff with the traveling. It just gets expensive for the parents, I think, more than anything. I don't think the girls mind it because it's kind of like a social outlet. But I think for the parents, it can get pretty pricey.
We were talking about the wear out part of it for the kids, that they burn out mentally or burn out physically a little bit earlier, and you've been at this internationally for 11 years. I mean, how are you doing physically, and how much longer do you plan to continue? What was your youth experience like? Do you have any of those concerns now, or what's it like for you 11 years into a pro career?
I know that, like, most of the girls that I played college with no longer play, but I didn't start playing volleyball until my junior year in high school. So I started really, really late. So my burnout, I mean, I still... And I was just telling my friend this the other day, like, I know I'll still play until the day comes that I either don't have fun or I don't feel like I need to learn anything more. And that day hasn't come yet. But, I mean, like, going back, like, when I talk to my friends from college and even girls that I played club ball with in high school that no longer play, you know, they played through their college careers and then, you know, whether it wasn't they didn't have because there's no league in the States or they didn't go to the national team or they didn't want to go, you know, to Puerto Rico or overseas or whatever, that they just decided to move on. But I still love it. I still have a lot of fun. And, you know, being here in Italy, I do it because the level's high, so it keeps me in shape for the national team. But I mean, talking with some friends and stuff, like I'd really start to, like, look around and see other countries and kind of experience other things because I know, you know, I think I'm 32 this year.
Well, you're in the prime rage.
But, I mean,
hopefully you're going out a lot at night.
Five more years.
You're in your prime years for raging.
I used to be able to, and now I'm like, gosh, I go out one night, it takes me like a week to recover. It's pathetic. But, yeah, no, I don't know. Maybe like another 4 or 5 years for me over here, and then I just, you know, I miss America. I'm gone all the time, and I miss my family and my friends, and I just feel like I'm missing out on everything that's going on at home. And like my friend had asked me about the basketball brackets for March Madness, and I was like, I don't even know what teams are in it. I couldn't even. I'm like, I'll just be giving you my money because I have no idea what's going on. And, but, yeah, I'd say maybe another, like, 5 years max.
Well, Heather, we appreciate you joining us here on the Net Live. We'll get you out of here on this. If you had to go out for one meal in Italy, what is it and where is it?
I had to go out for a meal?
Yeah, if you're going to go eat a nice meal, what's it going to be?
Oh, well, now that the weather's been nicer, I like to go to the sea and have a fish lunch because they have, like, fresh fish and you can sit and, like,
fresh
put your
fish.
Tables in the sand and you put your toes in the sand. Awesome. So a little fresh lunch with some white wine, not a bad deal.
Is that going to be an Ancona or Falconara? Is that because you're in Jesi this year, correct?
It's actually, yeah, Senigallia.
I'm
just outside of Jesi, so it's in Senigallia because that's pretty much the closest one. We go down there when, you know, cause it's supposed to be springtime now. It rained today, but once the sun comes out and it gets nice, the people start getting outside, and my teammates will go down there between practices and take a little sun, have a little lunch, and just kind of relax. So it's a nice deal.
Nice.
Awesome.
Heather, well, keep feasting. That's all I got to say to you. Just keep feasting. Keep feasting on balls and food and rage. Just keep feasting.
Heather, thanks so much for joining us here on the Net Live. We appreciate you calling in, and good luck the rest of the season. We'll look forward to seeing you on the national team shortly.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye, Heather.
See ya. With Heather, you really get a feel for what a great personality she has, how much fun she has doing her job, and just what a great personality she is for the sport today. Good stuff, Heather Bowen. Next up, James Lights, and what I hope is not the final conversation we ever have on this program with him about the future of beach volleyball as it relates to business, as it relates to his partnership and his company's partnership with USA Volleyball as they cooperate to try and run qualifiers and try and run what amounts to a beach tour coming up. Lots of great information in this interview about the business of beach, the business of volleyball, how it's viewed in the world in general, and what's going to happen going forward. Yes, I know his name is James Lights, not James Leitz. We had it wrong first. So skip over that. Give it a listen. James Lights, IMG, back in November.
This is James. You hear me?
James, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate you spending the time with us. We want to find out more about the recently announced USA Volleyball IMG 4-6 stop beach volleyball tour coming up this very next year. James, you were named as the guy who's integrally involved with this from IMG. Tell us about how this deal came together.
Well, you know, when Dave Williams made his move over to USA Volleyball, I think I was the second phone call that he got because, you know, IMG's been involved in the sport of volleyball, you know, and I personally, you know, I think I met Mike O'Hara back in 88 when I left college, and I worked for Group Dynamics when they ran the AVP Tour back in the day.
Nice.
So I wanted to I've always had an eye on it. We ran the Hermosa Beach Open for 5 years as part of Beach Bash. You guys may remember that. We've done a lot of FIVB stuff. And in other the Olympic trials in 96, we produced that in Baltimore. So I've always, you know, I kind of came from – I ran ISVT back in the day up in UC Santa Barbara. So volleyball was, you know, the gateway for me into action sports and lifestyle sports. And you know, I've always wanted to get back in a big way, and I always thought it was a really interesting place to build business and, you know, great athletes, great fans. There's a host of sponsors that really love the game. I think it's great on television. Look what the Olympics has done. Look what you've done, Kevin. Anyway, and so it didn't take long to see what Dave's moves were, and I said, hey, you know, what about this Olympic movement and this glide path to the Olympic trials, and how can we help? That's where it started in May, and I know I'm babbling, but I'll tell you, it wasn't really that, you know, at that time I had no idea the AVP would cancel its tour halfway through. You know, our objectives were pretty clear that we were trying to build some stability for USAV, get them deeper into the beach side of the sport. Dave was over there. I think he had some fence mending to build with the beach players, and we thought that this could be a good way to do it. Obviously, a lot of things have changed since that first conversation in May, but that's how it started.
I love that you mentioned ISVT, the Inter-Sorority Volleyball Tournament. I was involved with that as a coach at one point for my wife's sorority. That's a lot. An event that's turned into a huge thing. It's a lot of fun to be involved with.
Oh, it was great. I mean, that's how we got our dates for the spring formal.
That's a good plan. An excellent plan.
In 1986, it got so big that they threw us out of Santa Barbara off East Beach, and we moved it. I personally moved it to Zuma to try to keep it alive, and we did. And that's what gave me the idea of getting involved in sports marketing. And I said, well, if we can do it, move from SB to Zuma, then why can't we take it to Florida? And
that's how
it started for me.
It's interesting to me that this process started before the AVP collapsed. And when you look at 4 to 6 tournaments, it sounds like a good start. What's your model for promotion? We know, obviously, the AVP model has some issues. We've talked about it on this show. What's your model? Is it local promoters? Is it USAV office-driven? Is it driven out of your office? Tell us about it.
Okay. It'll be driven out of the IMG office, the 4 to 6 kind of elite events. We're working very closely with USAV. Obviously, Dave knows everybody on all sides, but they're performing their duties as our NGB, as our sanctioning body, and, you know, and using those great relationships that they have. But we're taking it on. IMG is the promoter. We're going to manage and run those events personally. We will be the boots on the ground, as it were, for those 4 to 6 tournaments. We know that 4 to 6 tournaments does not a tour make or a series make.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, so we are looking out to the regions. We're putting together kind of a regional qualifying package that we would like to tie into the series so that the players have a better chance at making a living, playing in various regions, really getting to know. I mean, there's 70 USAV promoters out there, and there's a lot of good ones, and there's a lot of great events. And if we build the right right roadmap, as it were, we could, you know, kind of extend the USAV IMG series deeper into the landscape.
Are you talking to some of the promoters that have had success in their previous relationships with the AVP and even continued once the AVP ended this year, when you talk about Cincinnati or Milwaukee?
Well, yeah, no, I think those discussions are on the table, but I also think we're going to go even more grassrootsy than that and look into the stable of USAV beach promoters as well. I mean, pretty much all conversations are on the table at this point. If we don't look at this as a blank canvas for the sport of beach volleyball, we're going to head down some pretty bad roads, as they say. You know, we it's got to be clean, it's got to be clear. We have a great opportunity as an industry and as a sport of really putting something together that's, you know, inclusive and not completely exclusive to various groups. So that's why we picked only 4 to 6 tournaments initially before the AVP had their troubles. You know, the idea was we were going to build 4 to 6 tent pole events because, you know, in our thinking, you know, the AVP would resurrect itself. It always has, you know, and that other promoters would want to, you know, create an opportunity for players to play. And we figured, well, if we create 4 to 6 great events and people could build in on and around us, and we could, you know, have an open door policy of discussion, then I think we're on to something at this point. Anything more than 6 tournaments on the level that we're talking, that's quite a sales effort, I have to tell you,
yeah,
and quite a TV effort too. And we got to watch that business model, as you alluded to earlier.
There's a lot of good and bad information out there, unfortunately mostly bad, about how not to run a tour.
on regards to the beach. How many events are you looking at long term? You say more than six is going to be a lot of work. Is six the ceiling, or are you looking beyond that outside of your 6-year plan, or maybe within it?
Oh no, we'd love to have more. No doubt about it. That's why we want to cultivate different regions. I mean, you know, in 2012, you know, if we do add our FIVB plan to April, and you know, there's then two Olympic trials. Now those still have to be bestowed upon the group here, but you know, there's nine, and then the core six, including the core six. We'd like to add more. I'd love to get it up to a 12 plus stop series. No doubt about it. I think that, you know, properly done, I think the sponsors are there for it. I think that the markets are definitely there for it. I know the fan base wants it. And I think that the appetite for television as we roll out of 2012 will be there for it, too. So there's a lot of things pointing in the right direction for growing it. And that's definitely our intention.
Hey, you said TV is part of the deal and part of the targeting that was in the initial release. Who are the targets? Is NBC back in the mix?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, as the, you know, for 2012, they still got the Olympics, and I think they want to build viewership for that. So, you know, that's a conversation. They also have their cable affiliates and associates that could bolster it. But right now, we're not taking off anybody off the table for a TV discussion at this point. We just got to be really careful about what level of investment we make in TV versus sponsorship, so we don't get upside down on that. I think, you know, exposure for these athletes is critical, and it's critical that we deliver the media and the CPMs for all the sponsors and so on, but we have to be really careful, and that's the old chicken and egg dance that we play as promoters, is not to get, you know, out of control on media spending when, you know, there's only a certain amount of sponsorship that'll sustain it. What we're hoping in the coming years, and I've seen it happen with surfing and across the other action sports, is a movement towards the digital space, which you guys know well. You know, there's so much great content, so many great matches on court four, you know, in a quarter final match. There's so much really good stuff that I think if we talk about live streaming, you know, matches on demand, player profiles, I think we can start building stars, building an understanding for the sport, showcase more of what's going on out there. You know, so I'm hoping that the industry and the sponsors that love the industry will start embracing what is becoming the norm, honestly, in most lifestyle sports, is to consume your content when you want it, where you want it, on the device you want it, you know, instead of waiting for the, you know, Sunday afternoon when you're outside anyway to see your tournament.
Yeah,
so
I think we've
just
seen,
a thought, and I think it's a balance. It's a balance.
We've seen the AVP explore that space with AVP TV with the support of Microsoft initially, when that kind of went away. And when you talk about the other networks and stuff, are you looking at it as a time buy on the network, or can you get some support from a network to pay some of the production costs and get yourself on TV? Because, you know, we know that was a big stumbling block for the AVP, was the amount they had to pay ABC, ESPN to produce events, and we've seen that with the indoor side as well with World League, that's a big challenge to overcome those numbers.
Yeah, those numbers are tough, and that is a big challenge, and that challenge is still facing us today. And we're hoping that you know, this as part of the glide path for the Olympics might help the USOC in their discussions, maybe assist us a little bit. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in that area to try to get, you know, volleyball, you know, a best part of the plan for these networks, and not something as an easy time buy for us all to make. So, no, that's still a big challenge for us.
You're listening to Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to IMG's James Leitz, involved with the recent announcement of the USA Volleyball IMG Beach Series upcoming next year. James, I also wanted to look at the numbers. I noticed the aim was $150,000 in prize money per event. If we're talking six events, $900,000 just for prize money. Taking a look at the total cost, I mean, on the cheap, my guess would be $3 million to do these six events if you were really cutting corners, or not cutting corners, but being mindful of the cost. Where is all this money going to come from?
Well, unfortunately, with lifestyle sports, it comes from sponsorships. And I wish it was $3 million, but anyway.
Yeah, what is the number then? If it's not $3 million,
we have a ways to go. We definitely have a ways to go.
If it's not $3 million, what's the number look like? What's the nut to crack?
It's the nut to crack is north of $3 million. I mean, if you know that's you know prize money alone is you know the number you're throwing out there. We're also talking about a bonus pool, but you know you got the permits for some of these fan favorite markets. You've got some decent sized stadiums and footprints to build out there. TV production's another number that's outside. You know, if there's a time buy, you can you know figure that out. You know it. You know if you want to really market this well. And really get the word out and put a really fresh coat of paint on the entire look and feel of a pro series like this. No, you can see how the numbers start to really, really creep up. And, yeah, and unfortunately, you know, when, you know, charging admission or merchandise or food and beverage or TV licensing rights or licensing in general are great revenue streams, sponsorship still drives these sports, and you know we'll explore all those revenue streams going forward. But you know we can't expect to help get the confidence back of these markets, the fan base, the players, and really not focus on really what the core product is. We want to open this thing up. We want to reintroduce the volleyball fans to their sport.
You mentioned that sponsorships is the core, and they need to sell something. It's nowadays, they need to see a return on investment for their money. I mean, your guy's been associated with the running of the U.S. Open of Surfing, a huge event each year in Southern California. The surf industry's proven it can move product for years and years outside of just technical wear, outside of boards. They can move product in the middle of the United States where there isn't an ocean to be found. With that in mind, tell me, what does beach volleyball sell?
Beach volleyball sells a lifestyle, in my opinion. You know, beach volleyball is fit. It's healthy. It's an image. It's you don't have the Quicksilvers, the Billabongs, you know, the Hurleys, the Nike 6.0s. You know, they drive that surf industry. And I got to tell you, in not having like in the old days, like we had with Club and Side Out and Hoi Polloi and all the old brands that really drove it, we don't have that sort of endemic industry. I mean, the ball manufacturers are, you know, Wilson, Spalding, Mikasa, Mizuno, those guys are all good. But, you know, there's really no, you know, you just grab your shorts and your ball or your bikini and your ball and you go play. Yeah, there's net systems and so on, but that's not big business. So the endemic industry for volleyball is not as robust as, say, surfing or even skateboarding or snowboarding for that matter. So it is a challenge, you know. So we have to really look to lifestyle brands, you know, brands that have been associated with it, that recognize that demographic, that, you know, the volleyball demographics is pretty, pretty appealing, and it's growing. And so, you know, we have to sell a lot of the those connection points for the sponsor to say, good, healthy lifestyle, great people, well-spoken, well-educated, family, sport. I want to align our brand with that, and so we really have to turn up the volume in those areas.
Yeah, it seems like it's the same thing where it's not a product thing. It's not quantifiable in that way. It just has to be an image for a corporation that maybe sells something else the way it used to be Miller Lite, who said this is what our summer identity is going to be is volleyball. You have to find that type of person. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, you know, and I wish for the beer wars again. I mean, that's when when ESPN2 came online and Bud Light was battling Miller Lite. I mean, it made frankly, the entire lifestyle and action sports industry. Those guys drove it. And you see it now with the energy drink wars
right.
action sports side, you know. And, you know, with the old battle of Coke and Pepsi, you know, what is the next thing that you know, the next competitive edge that volleyball could give to a brand, and who are they fighting? So believe me, we're talking to all those folks, you know, across the board, looking for that linkage.
You mentioned the Mervyn's Beach Bash years ago in Hermosa Beach. It incorporated BMX, skate, and volleyball all together. Will we see a return to that type of cross promotion, or have the extreme sports, that whole X Games thing, has that gone beyond including volleyball?
You know, I don't want to say no, but our objective really is to showcase beach volleyball. But there's a lot of other things to attach to beach volleyball. I think music, I think fashion, I think other things that you know that are cool for a day at the beach are things that we would want to amplify out there at our events. I mean, the idea is to build a festival. I think Beach Bash kind of surprised everybody at how successful it was right out of the gate. I mean, it scared the heck out of me when we had those kind of crowds. But, you know, I have to say, you know, the U.S. Open of Surfing kind of started with the Beach Bash model. It started with, you know, the U.S. Open of Surfing, and then we added those other things. But, you know, it was an easier kind of connection to add skateboarding and BMX and, you know, to the U.S. Open. Not sure I would venture down that road again with volleyball, but I would definitely look at each market and see what's hot in these certain areas and what sort of activity might be able to help it along. But right now, we don't, you know, we think the sport of volleyball is not broken in any stretch of the imagination, and we think if we put a really good hot volleyball product out there and showcase these stars and start introducing all the stars and the new ones coming up, I think we got a great story to tell. Love to see more music. I love what, you know, your co-host Geeter does, you know. Love to talk to him, you know, and bring that energy. So we'll
he'll
see.
Like to hear
we'll
that.
See.
Geeter needs a job, so he'd like to hear that. He'll be excited to hear that part. Right. I know we also have Reed Pretty on the line here. He's been jumping on and off, commuting back from his son's appointment. I had a question for you, James.
Hey, James. My question is, how do we make – is the sport a national sport? Are we – is a particular event like the Manhattan Open, is that meant to be a national, nationally watched sport and followed, or is it more of just an individual market?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I'm of the feeling that the Manhattan Open is the Wimbledon of beach volleyball. You know, I think it has a place on the world stage. I really do. I think that, you know, all these great FIVB tournaments all around the globe and, you know, China and, you know, I mean, all the places you guys go and play, you know, they all want to be like Manhattan Beach. They all want to be the Manhattan Open. I mean, that's got more lore and history. And as this sport grows, I mean, I think as Americans, you know, whatever, we got to claim it. And I think, that, you know, events like the Manhattan Beach Open, you know, should have that localized core, you know, power and regional appeal that it does and be just a major happening in the Southern California region. But I think that content and that message has got to get out worldwide. And I think we should showcase it as such because I think it's a powerful, powerful brand down there in Manhattan Beach. And I've seen that happen with the U.S. Open of Surfing. I know I keep going back to that. But, you know, look, it's not the best wave. It's not Chopu down there in Huntington Beach. But it's Surf City USA. It's where the sport was brought to the United States. It's where all our guys hang out and whatever. It's where the industry is located. I think Manhattan Beach has that same appeal. And, frankly, so does Hermosa, you know, and so I think the South Bay is a powerful place, and I think people around the world know it, and I want to talk about it.
James, question coming off our chat board is, how do you determine those cities? How do you find those cities for your tournament?
Well, you know, we've been around the country, and we've produced a lot of stuff in all various sports, and Dave Williams, I have to say, at USA Volleyball, the guy picks up the phone, he can talk to a mayor just about anywhere in this country. I mean, the AVP did one thing, that's for sure, is they really got around and saw stuff. I want to, you know, it's almost like, you know, we have a really, again, it's a blank canvas, but there are some tried and true markets. And, you know, I don't feel like going inland too much and building a giant sandbox. I want to take the sport to where the sport was born and hit those markets where people know and appreciate it and will come out and show our sponsors and show our players that they love the game. And that we know how to work, you know, we know how to build on the beach, you know. So when I look at, you know, Huntington Beach, I look at Hermosa and Manhattan and Belmar and Chicago and, you know, somewhere really tasty in Florida, perhaps in Texas, a strong market, you know, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to look too far to find the type of location that would, I think, fit this in its first year.
One of the other people involved in this I saw was the Leverage Agency, who previously was involved with the AVP Tour. I mean, Leverage brought Nivea to the AVP this year, and according to the filings that are the stuff that we've seen, they're still owed $250,000, Nivea is. How does Leverage maintain any credibility in this situation if they're now trying to continue to sell the sport?
Well, Leverage, you know, I think Leverage is – look, Nivea is very upset. There's no doubt about it, and I think we all know it, and everybody – who's been trying to resurrect a volleyball property for 2011 has hit Nivea up, and I, you know, they may be fatigued with the sport right now, and that's a shame because they were somebody who was going to build. There's a brand that was going to build an entire marketing and communications platform around your sport, and they have been turned off. Now, what sort of splash that has on leverage, you know, I think leverage has managed that damage control as best they can. I mean, leverage is as, you know, I feel sorry for them because they lost money, too, on the whole thing. Leverage is, you know, leverage impressed us in that they found a way to communicate to brands and communicate to Madison Avenue the power of beach volleyball. And I think they have a lot of real strong relationships out there. And, you know, they've teed up a lot of great conversations for us. And I think that they had a lot of success with AVP. I think it was just unfortunate that they got in at the time. It's bad timing. And I'm hoping that if we put a better, smarter, hopefully, package out there, that leverage is going to be able to take it to some of those brands and just crack that door open so we can rush in and hopefully convince them over years now that this is still a great marketing vehicle for them.
Yeah, talking about that package, you said in the article, you said, our intent is to stabilize the sport and maintain a glide path to the Olympics. The vision we have is 6 years long and ends with the Olympics in Brazil, where beach volleyball will be bigger than ever. Tell us about that vision.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't end in 6 years. I was misquoted.
Okay.
It goes on. I mean, the way I see it is, no, I mean, what I wanted to instill in everybody is that we're in it for the long haul. You know, should we get this model right and get this thing cooking? I know, you know, the 2012 games are here, and we are going to do the Olympic trials for the first time since 96, and you know, giving the players a domestic option for qualifying and to, you know, name these teams. But if you look down the road, you look at, you know, Brazil in 2016, and you look at our player base, and you look out, you know, who's that star that you see on the podium, you know, in 2016, and it's I don't want to say it's tough. I don't have the crystal ball, but I think by, you know, we need to start developing talent. We need to start, you know, really thinking about what the sport is, what the U.S. game is as we look towards the Olympics. And, you know, there's always that post-Olympic kind of letdown. You know, we want to come off 2012, you know, on fire, you know, to be honest with you, and carry those next 18 months to 2 years with a stronger tour, you know, with you know, really showcasing our talent, our young talent, you know, that roadmap, because Brazil is going to embrace volleyball big time, and USA needs our teams to be ready to go. It's going to be really an interesting thing that's going to happen there. So I see that as a great kind of like a magnet. And in also another way, you know, with the NCAA and the sand game, and, you know, Dave and USAV can speak more to this than I can, but I think there's going to be some really great development happening as well for both, you know, for women for sure, but for men, we got to start showing that guy who's 12 years old right now kind of a roadmap of how we can get either to the games. He can get involved with a good regional series. He can get involved with a pro series and kind of start to, you know, let them at least show them the roadmap for expanding their own game, you know, and that volleyball, beach volleyball in particular, is a choice for them.
You mentioned the fact that it's stuck into that kind of Olympic cycle of attention and the cheering for the flag. How important is the relationship with the FIVB and bringing FIVB events here to the United States and perhaps partnering with them to keep people not only cheering for the athletes but also cheering for the flag?
Well, I think the FIVB relationship is important. They're recognized by the IOC as the volleyball governing body, and they, you know, recognize then, you know, USAV. It's all part of a linkage. And I think that the AVP had their issues with FIVB over the years, and I think it didn't help. Really didn't really help anybody. And I think we have a great opportunity, again, to you know, work with the FIVB. Look, they need events here in the States. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, the United States doesn't have an FIVB World Tour stop, you know, is kind of a shame in a way.
Right.
Now,
right.
Granted,
almost
their model is tough. We ran some, and they're brutal. But we see that, you know, an opportunity to link the U.S. to Brazil through a South Florida FIVB event might be interesting, you know,
yeah.
In 2012. We're talking about that. We talk to the FIVB all the time. They really want to get something going here. I think for the folks that are selling FIVB media around the world and their sponsorship, having a domestic U.S. footprint is really important. They see us as good partners in helping get that, getting that to happen, and that's definitely part of our charge. I just think that, you know, it's a really great opportunity to build a, you know, pro level series that has that attachment too. You know, so that's my feeling, and I do think that helping our, you know, our teams, our U.S. teams, you know, by kind of softening the issues in the relationship between U.S. volleyball and FIVB would be smart.
James Leitz is the point man for IMG and will be putting the boots on the ground for a beach volleyball tour in 2011, 4 to 6 events coming in conjunction with USAV. James, we appreciate you spending the time with us here on the Net Live. Great information, and we'll look forward to seeing how it continues to develop.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
All right, James Leitz, thank you. There is some really important information in there from James Leitz. Really good stuff. I'm interested to see how it all develops going forward. If you have any thoughts on this show or any other, email us anytime, thenetlive@gmail.com. Friend us on Facebook. We have lots of fun stuff going on there, videos, other things contributed by fans of the show. That's facebook.com/thenetlive. And I hope you get involved in the conversation. We know you love the sport. Get your opinion out there. You never know. You might spark some sort of a rant or a conversation on the show. Speaking of rants, here's two back-to-back. We're going to play it to end out the program. It's myself about the NCAA and Geeter about clean living. Coming up from the end of this past year, they're not the only rants. They're not the last. More good stuff coming from the Net Live. Enjoy these rants, and we will see you all next week live in studio. Thanks for being here. See ya. My rant is this. The NCAA needs to figure it out. All right, volleyball is the most popular sport for women. Not basketball. Stop pretending that people enjoy watching short, substandard athletes try and do things on a 10-foot rim. Lower the basket and stop telling me how pure the game is, okay? I don't care about jump shots. I don't care about passing. I care about dunking and people playing above the rim. But let me get back to volleyball. Volleyball is a sport that women play extremely well. They are entertaining to watch, both for their skill and their beauty. Let's be honest, these athletes are beautiful. Young women who are excellent at what they do. With that, find a sponsor for this tournament. You can't get a sponsor that can back 6-foot-tall women playing sport at a high level or plus 6'5". You can't get someone to back that, NCAA. You can't sell that. Okay? The TV is there. The people are there. They put more than 12,000 people in the stands in a place where no one had a team. Sell what you own. Quit hanging on to it. And quit telling me about the entire tournament can't be seeded because of financial reasons. Okay, I looked it up. You made more than $700 million in 2009. I'm sure in 2010 you made even more. $700 million. And yes, that money is being spent places to support student athletes in various pursuits. That money should be spent to make sure the premier sport on the women's side of the game is seeded all the way to the bottom so you get a real result. On the other side, the men's championship, the reason it hasn't grown is because the NCAA won't put any money behind it. Get rid of the scholarship requirement of 4.5, okay? It's a joke that you have people that are the best in their sport that are on a half a scholarship. And you have women on the other side who couldn't carry their books to class and they're on the team and those books are paid for. And that's no rant against the women. This is the NCAA needs to loosen that restriction and allow the sport to grow. Don't tell me about participation numbers. The only reason you have the participation numbers you have on the women's side is because of the 12 scholarships that are available at school. So there's 10,000 scholarships out there, and people get involved for a variety of reasons, but one of them is scholarship money to school. That drives it. It would drive it on the men's side also. But here's the dirty little secret about the NCAA. It's no different than any other business out there. They're trying to get as much money as possible for the goods and services they sell. The only thing is they sell athletes who are beholden to them, who are not compensated anywhere near what their actual value is to the organization. There are plenty of good feel-good stories out there every year about how athletes are uplifted by their experience in school, taken from poverty and given a college education, have gone on to success. There are equally as many stories about kids who are used for their basketball and football talents,
and who are cast aside as soon as they are injured and leave school with nothing because nobody really actually cared what they were as people. They only wanted them to make that money, make that $700 million, make that big contract. I want to hear both sides of it. I want the NCAA to support the women's game in the way that it should be supported, given the participation numbers and the sport that it is. That is all. Singular applause. Kids, start applauding now.
Can you play the crowd music?
I don't even have. I'm too upset even to think about it. All right, Geeter, rant time.
Well, for me, Barney, I want everyone that's listening out there to kind of close your eyes and think about Will Ferrell in Anchorman towards the end when he's in the bar and he's just going through the glass case of emotion and he's been kicked when he's down and he's drinking sour milk and he's miserable and his friends have left him. Think about that scene.
Okay.
That's what I have felt like these past 5 months. My attitude has changed. More negativity in my life. I've been down. I haven't been the same around my house, around my friends. I'm roller coaster of emotions. Sometimes I'm happy. Sometimes I'm stoked where I'm at. Sometimes I'm excited because I'm doing a football game or I'm working a Laker game. Then the next day comes and I wake up and I realize there is no more AVP. I did lose a job. My friends lost a job, a good paying job for me. Whether it comes back or not, it's not going to be the same that it was for me. I worked 13 years to get to a certain point, to get to a broadcast point, to be able to entertain people, and I worked hard at it. And it was gone in a matter of 20 days. We're going to do this. It's going to close. It's going to close. We kept up hope. Boom. We are closing the doors. Your last paycheck comes on August 30th. Now, I've always had other work, and that's going to be fine. You move on. But on a personal level, a professional level, a financial level, a social level, a complete roller coaster that I've felt these last 4 months. Anger. Pity, passion, all kinds of emotion. I've gotten fired up. Then I went away from it, Barney. Then I went away from it and I said, I'm going to distance myself from sport. But everywhere I go, I get asked about it. From John Barry of ESPN to my brother's mother-in-law to the guy that lives six houses down. They want to know what's up with the AVP. So I've had all these emotions, my friend. And I think it's affected the way I've acted. I think it's affected my whole being, positivity that I think I usually am. It's definitely affected me the last 4 months. I've thought of changing professions. I've gone through a weird emotions. And it reminds me, now we go off of Will Ferrell and we go to Rocky III. When he's going to fight Clubber Lang, and Mickey looks at him, he says, "You can't beat him, Rock. You can't beat him, Rock." I felt like that. And then you go out and you just get your ass kicked by Clubber Lang. That's what I feel like. But I am promising our listeners on the Net Live and all those people out there, remember Rocky III. Apollo then trains him, and he comes back. He comes back, and he fights Clubber Lang. You're just the paper champion. Hey, woman, let me tell you how a real man thinks. That's what Clubber Lang's saying to me right now. Clubber Lang is looking at Millie on that bike. He wants to take her from me. My whole attitude has been crap, and it's going to change today. I don't care if your kids are playing Madden down there. They're not bothering me one bit. What bothers me is my attitude these last 4 months. I'm going to change it. I'm going to get off the mat, and I'm coming back strong. I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to eat right. No more peppermint mocha iced lattes because they make me feel good. No more laying on the couch, you fat ass. I'm getting up off the mat. I'm taking Clubber Lang down. I don't care what happens to beach volleyball. I hope great things. I will be there when it comes back in some capacity, and I'm back. 2011, I'm turning it around. I had no notes. I went off the cuff, and I'm sorry. I don't know where that rant came from. I don't even know if it made sense, but I'm back.
Can I get a Casey Patterson? Boom! Booyah!
Nice.